It's E-Commerce Minute, your weekly dose of e-commerce, tech, and retail news with your hosts, John Suter, Bart Meraz, and Brittany Blackman. The E-Commerce Minute is a production of Sumo Heavy, a digital commerce consulting firm in Brooklyn, New York, and Philadelphia. Find us on the web at sumoheavy.com.
It's the E-Commerce Minute, episode 772.
These are our top stories in e-commerce, tech, and retail for the week of November 16th, 2020. Our first story, DoorDash IPO. DoorDash has become the go-to delivery choice for millions of people cooped up during the pandemic this year. Now it has filed an S-1, revealing its financials as it nears a long-intended IPO. These numbers show an exciting business and a larger story about how the year is going for tech companies in general. DoorDash has grown rapidly, scaling its revenues from $291 million in 2018 to $885 million in 2019. Revenue in Q3 more than tripled what DoorDash did in the same quarter in 2019, and more recently growing from $587 million in the first 9 months of 2019 to $1.92 billion with a B in the same period of 2020. That's a 226% growth in 2020 thus far. And how high quality is DoorDash's revenue? In the first three quarters of 2019, the company had gross margins of 39.9%. And in the same period of 2020, the figure rose to 53.1%. And that is a huge improvement. So what's different? Well, DoorDash is going full deliver everything. It bragged that if it can deliver unmelted ice cream, it can deliver anything. And that's what it's trying to do. In addition to restaurant and grocery delivery, DoorDash partnered with CVS for pharmacy delivery and Macy's for clothing delivery. Mom and pop shops could be next. The all-in-one platform could keep promiscuous customers loyal and reduce the need for endless promos. That's why DoorDash mentioned food 169 times in its S-1 and logistics 200 times. DoorDash is the number one food delivery in the U.S. and has an enviable 50% share of the market compared to Uber Eats at 26%. Grubhub at 16% and Postmates, which Uber is buying, at 7%. But the company is still not profitable. DoorDash has significantly cut its net loss from $533 million in 2019 period to $149 million in 2020. Okay, lots of numbers. Let's just talk about DoorDash. I'm just tired of reading all these numbers, and I bet you it's even harder to listen to. So DoorDash still losing money, but still 50% of the market share. I hadn't realized that they were that big. Again, I always say this on the podcast, my disclaimer is I'm not a guy who uses delivery service. I use Uber Eats a few times just to try it, only because I figured, what do they say? You got to eat your own dog food. I want to talk about this stuff. I want to know what the heck's going on. You guys could speak to this better. So let's hear your opinions on this.
I just remember when it was just Postmates a couple years ago.
Postmates. I mean, Grubhub and Seamless are the two biggies. I mean, like, one biggie, really.
I remember the only one everyone that I knew ordered from was Postmates, and it was constantly glitching and my cards were constantly compromised.
That's not good.
Oh, that's right. That's you always had that issue.
Always on Postmates. And so now I like DoorDash better. I've never had an issue on DoorDash, so I guess it makes sense that it has the share. Because besides that, I just don't know how DoorDash is so significantly more used than the other ones, you know?
I mean, so when it comes to delivery apps, obviously the grandfather of it is Grubhub and Seamless. Mm-hmm. Same company, they just happen to be older. So like Seamless is definitely a New York type of thing. Like if you people, like when I moved to New York, it was all about Seamless.
Everybody, yeah, I remember Grubhub. You and I talking a lot about that, and you were always mentioning Seamless, and I would just scratch my head and go, okay.
Cool. Grubhub is the other one. It's been around forever. Like that's the biggies. And the funny thing is all the tech work exactly the same. They still use faxes, which is kind of crazy.
Wait, what do you mean they use faxes?
So Grubhub and so Grubhub and Seamless, when you ordered something online, they literally send a fax to the restaurant.
Oh, to kind of serve as the ticket?
As the ticket, yeah. Obviously, now all these other ones, Postmates and random, they just give them iPads, which
yeah, so works out. So when you walk into a restaurant, or back when you used to be able to go to restaurants, you used to see all those little pads next to the POS system, depending mm-hmm. on how many systems they were using.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. I think they're starting to integrate them into POS systems, which is great, but there's so much tech to it. But Postmates and DoorDash, I guess, came out at the same time, and then Uber Eats kind of got in the mix too. All of them kind of deliver same thing, basically. It's just how much are they taking away from restaurants? Like, do you, when you're on one, do you need to be on all of them? like this, it's the same issue with everything, right? Especially now, these companies need to make money, but how much, like if you go to a restaurant websites and it actually has ordering, like John, you know this, you've been playing with something right now.
Mm-hmm.
Is it 10% off? Is it 15% that they're putting money up top? I just don't, it's so expensive sometimes.
And that is the struggle. So the one thing that Bart is referencing to, I'm helping a restaurant, a local club, a nonprofit set up a online ordering system. The thing that they're struggling with is they need to get market share. So they're willing to cannibalize their business and use DoorDash for a few months just to get awareness and then cut it off. So these restaurants are forced to lose money just to gain awareness. So it's almost like you have to take that fee and make it a line item in your marketing if you're a smaller business. Now, some of the other chains, they'll use multiple systems just because they're just cranking out so many orders and hopefully they make it up in that way. But the fees are just almost crippling to a smaller business. The one system that I'm referring to, I won't mention the name, but they take 99 cents per order. That's just for the online ordering, which that's great. That's fine. But then when the DoorDash driver comes and he takes his fee and then the tax man takes his fee and it's all of a sudden we're selling a $15 meal and our profit on that might be $7. Well, you know, how can you make profit? How can you make a business if you're only making $5 a meal?
It's like, was it your Big Mac all of a sudden costs $20?
Oh yeah. Anytime I go to get McDonald's, it ends up being $45.
Yeah. I ordered from, so this is what I generally don't like delivery. And it's not because I don't like having things delivered to my house. I generally, as an experience, do not like having food delivered to my house. I will order it online and go pick it up. There's a local sushi joint around for me. And I went online, and being that I've been kind of steeped in this lately, I said, all right, I'm going to Google the name of the restaurant and see what is presented. Because a lot of times you'll get things that'll override it, like Yelp or whatever the other ones that are criminally putting menus up. And what I did notice is Google said, here's Menufi. And they gave me, now I know this restaurant, so I know the menu, but I was like, this is the same menu, but presented completely different. So then I skimmed over it, and then I went back to Google, and I then scrutinized the little box on the right. And it said that there's now a thing on Google that says, here's the menu. And then it says website, nameofrestaurant.com. And in a parenthesis says, the restaurant prefers you use this. Mm. But when I went to order, it was still powered by Menufi. So is there another charge being on top of that? Or okay, how there's just so many layers to this now. And that's, again, we've done other reports on this where these services are just putting up the menu and saying, yeah, we're going to come get food. And the restaurant's like, we don't use this. We don't do this. And then you see on Facebook, it's like a restaurant in the city says, we don't use Uber Eats. We don't use Grubhub. Like, we don't know how this listing got up here, but please don't use these services.
Yeah. It's,
that's so icky.
They're all struggling as it is. And then to have to deal with these fees, it's going to be real interesting because you hear the call of, yes, support your local business, order takeout. But then it's like, well, how am I going to get takeout? It's cold out. I don't want to go outside. I call Uber Eats, Grubhub, DoorDash, Instacart, whatever.
Oh, yeah. And I'm on, I'm a foodie, quote unquote. So I'm on, food Instagram here in Philly. And the restaurants are already starting another round of relief funds and GoFundMes and stuff
Friday.
Like that.
We're recording this on November 18th, and as of Friday, they're going to have to close up their indoor dining. So, yeah.
Buy gift cards, everyone. Buy gift cards.
Yeah, that's what they're saying.
All right. Any final thoughts on the DoorDash IPO?
I think that's all we got.
All right, moving on to our next story. Alibaba Singles Day 2020. We love reporting on this one. Alibaba Singles Day is a 24-hour shopping extravaganza that regularly racks up bigger sales than Black Friday and Cyber Monday combined. But this year, it's taking on a new meaning as a showcase for the country's success in battling the COVID-19 pandemic. Singles Day ran for nearly 2 weeks, from November 1st to November 11th. Alibaba reported that the annual sales frenzy broke records once again, raking in 498.2 billion yuan, or roughly $75 billion. The total includes an earlier three-day period that was added to boost post-pandemic sales. Ooh, so they goose through numbers a little bit. We'll compare those numbers to Amazon's 2020 Prime Day on October 13th and 14th, which garnered $10.4 billion in gross merchandise sales, according to Statista, because Amazon doesn't release those numbers, I don't think. Compared to Singles Day last year, this year's haul on Singles Day was an increase of 26%. Alibaba said the 250,000 brands participated in the Singles Day event this year, of which 31,000 were from overseas. The United States was the top country selling to China by GMV. In fact, Michael Evans, president of Alibaba, said over $5 billion of Alibaba's total $74.1 billion GMV came from U.S. brands. 100-plus brands, including Adidas, Estee Lauder, and Nike, generated $15 million in gross merchandise volume within the first 111 minutes of the preview. Shoppers with more to spend gravitated toward video commerce. For instance, 770,000 shoppers tuned into a shoppable Cartier live stream. Just wrap that around. 770,000 people watched a Cartier live stream. So it was probably someone just walking around with jewelry. Almost 1 million people watched that. Crazy.
That is crazy.
My gosh.
Yeah, so there were no interesting stats like the X vendor sold 2 million pounds of shrimp in the first 5 minutes. I was looking for those kind of stats. I don't see those here.
Yeah, but I couldn't find them either.
we always like those. I think everyone's kind of numb to these numbers and they just keep going up. No surprise. And I think obviously, we'll say the quiet part out loud, COVID obviously contributed to this. So numbers aren't surprising. It's staggering, though, compared to even we look at Amazon, you think, oh, it's like, look how big those numbers are. And it's only just even a percentage of what they make through this holiday.
I mean, it's just the numbers are just staggering.
It is crazy.
Yeah.
Especially over 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think to compare it to Prime Day is almost unfair because it does go for 2 weeks. But not to damper these numbers, there was some big news in Chinese tech a couple weeks ago when the Chinese government kind of put the kibosh on the IPO of the Ant Group. So really, because of antitrust guidelines, and it said could potentially affect tech giants and e-commerce companies. Well, it certainly did. Alibaba lost $60 billion of their market cap. Tencent lost $63 billion and Meituan lost $39 billion. Crazy. I mean, you have to think about these guys, and the IPO really doesn't have anything to do with Singles Day, but think about these guys that were riding was going to be the biggest IPO ever in the world. And now all of a sudden the valuation is just like $280 billion in market cap is gone just because of just someone passed a law like days before this IPO.
It's just nuts, right?
Just create like unfathomable amounts of money. All right.
Insane.
Insane. Okay. And for our third story, Ring doorbells recalled. The U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission has posted a recall notice for Ring's second generation doorbell. Some 350,000 units in the U.S. and 8,700 in Canada are being recalled over fire and burn concerns. The devices were on sale, obviously, through Amazon sites and retail locations as they acquired Ring, when? A year ago? 2 years ago?
Something like that.
The recall comes in the wake of 23 reports of fire and 8 reports of minor burns related to the model. Imagine being burnt by your doorbell. According to the CPSC, the issue relates specifically to the use of incorrect screws during the smart doorbell's installation. Ring says the issue should not impact users as long as they don't catch on fire, and so as long as they only use the screws included with the system. Incorrect use, on the other hand, could directly damage the doorbell's battery, leading to fires. So the problem arises when the consumer mistakenly uses a wood screw to mount the doorbell itself. This can damage the doorbell's battery, and the device may overheat. All right, so it's an electrical problem. But the doorbells come in 2 colors, satin nickel and Venetian bronze, and have the model 5UM5E5. So if you have a Ring doorbell, check that number, check your email. I'm sure Amazon has sent you several emails by now saying, hey, buddy, your doorbell's broke.
Also, install them correctly, for the love of God.
And then install them correctly. It's funny, I was just going to buy one of these and I held off because I thought I am not going to be able to install this correctly. And I the way my door is set up, it's kind of weird. I'm like, I'm going to call an electrician.
It's actually, believe it or not, pretty easy to install.
Yeah, we have one.
I installed one too. They're really piece of cake. As long as you have the easiest, actually, if you have a doorbell that has electrical on it, meaning that you're like where the actual doorbell is, not the button, but the doorbell. If you, it's electrical, it's so easy to install.
My problem is that where my doorbell is, it's how would you call it? It's almost like a crown molding. So it's got, it's like scalloped and it's not flat. And I have a real skinny doorbell that kind of slaps on there. And I figured I would have to put something behind it. And then I'm like, you know what?
I'm going to get
a dude to do that.
I'll do it. I'll come over and just do it.
Come on. I got a lot of other work for
Bar comes right. over in an Amazon truck.
My tool belt.
Yeah, what's the phrase, Bart? The Mr. Mom phrase?
220, 221. I don't know.
Whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes. Oh, you putting, where are you putting 220? Yeah, 220, 221. Whatever it takes.
221. And these doorbells and all related security devices related to Amazon. It's funny, as I'm talking about this, I have a first generation Echo sitting next to my desk. I was going to get rid of it and I figured I'll just put it next to my desk, but it's listening to me. The little blue ring keeps going on as I'm talking through this story. So to add to the rice pudding, the cherry on the rice pudding. Rice pudding. These things are not without controversy. Amazon's smart doorbell ring may be using its app to surveil users. A report from the EFF revealed on Wednesday. The Ring for Android app shares user data, including names, private IP addresses, mobile network carriers, and sensor data with a number of third-party trackers, the investigation found. At least four analytics and marketing companies receive such information from customer devices. Each time a customer opens the Ring app, it sends information to Facebook about the user, including the time zone, device model, language preferences, screen resolution, and a unique identifier, the report found. It also sends information to the data company AppsFlyer, including user actions, mobile carrier, and when Ring was first installed and launched, the report found. In addition, it shares data from sensors installed on the phone, including a magnetometer, gyroscope, and accelerometer, and current calibration settings. All right. After purchasing Ring in 2018, the brand has been a source of controversy for both privacy and security concerns. In September, the company promised to add end-to-end encryption for videos captured on the devices. But what about all that other stuff?
Classic.
This is a privacy nightmare. And I'm sure the company line is, we use this data to make
Welcome to Amazon.
Why is it sending it to Facebook?
I think there's a login with Facebook.
Hey, Bart's home. Status update.
I don't know. I mean, everything is tracking you anyway, but I don't know. But besides that, if you really want to listen to how Ring actually got started, go to How I Built This by Guy Raz. He has a whole podcast around how Ring started.
I will second that podcast just in general, How I Built This by Guy Raz. It's a very, very good podcast. Okay. And he actually quote tweeted me once, so that's my claim to fame.
All right. His book is actually really good too.
Oh, so. What's the book?
How I Built This.
Wow, what a clever name. Yes. No, Guy Raz is great. He's great. He's a great podcaster, great personality. He's good.
Soothing voice.
Yeah, soothing voice. I love your work. So Guy, if you're out there, we love your work. I gotta stop saying we're at the 23-minute mark. So we're gonna do one more story. Walmart offers pet insurance. Walmart is offering Walmart Pet Care, through which the retailer will sell pet insurance from Pet Plan and to dog sitters through Rover. A 10% discount will be provided on pet insurance bought through Walmart, and gift cards can be earned for booking dog sitters through the retailer. The partnership with pet care providers comes after Walmart saying that they are ready to sell 3 million pet beds, indicating the massive demand in the pet care market. According to Jefferies Research, the U.S. pet care market is estimated to reach $64 billion with a B by 2024. And in 2019, around $95 billion was spent in the U.S. pet industry. Around 2.8 million pets were insured as of 2019. Only 3 out of 100 dogs are insured in the U.S., according to a study. I picked this story because pet insurance is now a big thing. When we saw the IPO of Lemonade earlier this year, this was one of the services that they offered, and people were raving about it. And suddenly now people are very, very aware about pet insurance, because as anyone knows, it's fairly inexpensive to own an animal until they get sick. My mother spent over $4,000 on her cat. I've known other people who have spent thousands and thousands of dollars on their dog just for, like, she ate something stupid or something's really wrong or whatever. And this will come out of nowhere and this will just totally crush you, not only psychologically because you hate to see your pets suffer, but in the wallet too. So I would highly recommend getting pet insurance. And Walmart, obviously being Walmart, very smart to get into this business.
Brittany has stories.
Yeah, I do. So when you buy a cat, you're under the pretense, oh, it's a cat. They're easy. So when I purchased Hoagie for a measly $50, they were like, do you want pet insurance? And I was like, no, why the heck would I get pet insurance? It's like, it's $100 to sign up. Like, ew, like it's a cat. And then my cat's a problem cat. And $2,500 later at the animal hospital for them to tell me that he has seasonal allergies.
Here's some Claritin.
I should have gotten pet insurance. So yeah, I didn't realize how important and necessary pet insurance actually was.
You should be a spokesperson now for pet insurance.
Yeah.
Yes, I should. And it makes complete sense that Walmart, of all companies, is dabbling.
Right.
Agreed. The numbers are huge. Huge opportunity. And this is what I always tell people. They're like, I want to start a business. I'm like, if you do anything with pets, people will pay for the pets before they buy food for themselves. So,
oh yeah.
Great opportunity there for you entrepreneurs out there. So yeah, pet insurance. I don't know what the cost is. Let's see if we can look.
It's probably not a lot.
Especially
because it's Walmart.
Yeah. I mean, $50 to $100 per year. It's probably like, it makes it easy.
And I guess there's different levels of plans, but this article is very generic in the specifics of it. But yeah, Walmart will be adding pet insurance. There's other places that you can get pet insurance, like Lemonade, Nationwide, Trupanion. There's other ones that you can get through your vet, although they're probably marked up a little bit. But yeah, I would definitely recommend this. It's almost like renter's insurance. It's like,
yeah.
You kind of hope nothing will happen, but it will.
We've definitely talked about Rover before too.
Yeah.
Rover's the dog walker service. Dog sitters.
Oh, the little houses.
No, that's a different thing. Rover dog. It's the dog walking. Boarding and dog walking. So they're like the Airbnb. It looks like an Airbnb site.
Airbnb. All right.
It's like, yeah, you can go in, you can do boarding, house sitting, drop-in visits, doggy daycare, dog walking. Great business. People love their animals, and the numbers spent in this country definitely reinforce that. That's funny. I see more and more dogs allowed in more and more places each day, whereas back in ye olden days, it was like, what is your dog doing here? And now it's, where's your dog? Bring your dog. Come on, bring your dog.
Especially with like COVID.
Yeah,
everyone wants the sweet release of seeing a pupper on the street or
that's the somewhere. Truth.
That's the only thing that brings me joy lately.
I'll give you my one pupper story. Two Saturdays ago, it was a rare November day on the East Coast where it was above 70 degrees, and my lady friend and I decided, well, let's take a ride to Asbury Park, which is the Jersey Shore, and we figured, it's off season, there's nobody there. Well, I couldn't have been more wrong. I don't know what my naive thinking, I don't know what I was thinking, but the bright spot was Asbury Park allows dogs on the boardwalk, and it was filled with pupperonis everywhere. I was just petting dogs all day long. You can't go sit in the bar. You can't walk in a restaurant. Every restaurant is an hour and a half wait. So we just walked around and looked at pepperonis all day. It was great.
I think I'd rather do that than sit and drink at this point.
It was nice.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to close this one up. Let's not forget, next week is Thanksgiving. We'll be back next Friday to break down the week's e-commerce tech and retail news. And don't forget our long-form podcast, In the Ring. We've just dropped a new episode featuring serial entrepreneur George Hartley. He's from Australia and a very cool guy. And he's the founder and CEO of Smarter Mail, which is an automation tool that helps stores send better email marketing by using machine learning to personalize their emails. So go check that out. That's In the Ring. It's Sumo Heavy, available at Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Until then, have a great Thanksgiving. Stay safe, and we'll see you on the internet next Friday. Bye, guys. Bye. Say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Jesus. What is wrong with you people?